Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah, baby.
Thank you, Ellie, as she leaves the room.
Yep.
I make Julia laugh a lot off air. I'm not allowed to interrupt her during her traffic report anymore.
I would like if she sat in here during the show and just listened to the show, because she laughs a lot, and that's infectious, and it sort of feeds the beast a little bit. It gets you feeling a little confident in your humor and things like that.
She's my muse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like making Ali laugh.
Right, right.
And she also saves my life. She just prevented me from calling a woman the wrong name. And I would have done it for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, sometimes, that saved your life.
Even when I know people, sometimes I flip their names in my brain.
Do you think they look like a certain name sometimes? Is that
sometimes, yeah, that's what it is.
Is that what happened just
now?
Well,
you know what just happened? And it actually happens. I have to be very careful with this. I talked to Oliver Luck for a little bit the other night. Mm. And in my mind, the whole time, I'm saying, remember, Seth, he's not Archie Manning. He's not Archie Manning. And I do this weird thing with both Archie Manning and Oliver Luck. And I've done it when I've had conversations with both of them. Like the last time I talked to Archie Manning, I was telling myself, he's not Oliver Luck. He's not Oliver Luck. I won't mess up the names, but there's a very good chance last night or 2 nights ago when I was talking to Oliver Luck that at some point, even as I'm having a conversation about very Oliver Luck type things, I might have been like, so do you think your son's going to get in the Hall of Fame? And it wouldn't have made any sense at all. But I would have been talking about Eli.
Yeah.
In my mind, it's super, super weird.
That's an easy one. Not easy, but that's one where you can understand conflating the two.
Because they're both NFL quarterbacks.
Who both played for the Oilers.
Whose sons were both drafted first overall by the Colts.
By the same team.
Yeah. It's very, very strange.
So I'm going to give you a pass on that one.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Now, calling Bridget Rachel, I'm not going to give you a pass.
Her name is Bridget. How's it going training Rachel?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she said, who the hell's Rachel?
Right.
You know, the one that everybody else calls Bridget.
Ali is training somebody on traffic this week. So that's the deal. So did you know that you made Jerry Jones cry?
I did know this actually.
You
yeah.
Did? Okay.
Yeah.
Jonesy, let's flip the order of these two right here. This is Jerry Jones was on with us at the Houston Sports Awards the other day. He presented the late Bob McNair for the Lifetime Achievement Award. He presented the award to the McNair family. And Jerry Jones said there are two times that he has cried since owning the Cowboys.
I said, all of this to think about. And then here he comes in. He makes a presentation to the owners about bringing the team to Houston, bringing it back to Houston. He was elegant from the very beginning. He bested me every time I looked around. He was a few steps ahead of me in every way. And I'm going to mention tonight, but there were two times, and maybe two of three, that I've teared up and cried in the NFL. And one of them was when we rolled in here. It was inaugural night, we let the new Houston beat the Dallas Cowboys, and that was hard to take, but if it was going to happen, it needed to happen with Bob McNair.
Seth Payne had a safety in that game. You sacked Quincy Carter in that game for
a safety. Right.
So by proxy, you made Jerry Jones, a billionaire, cry. Congratulations.
He's told that story before. I'm not quite sure I entirely believe him. I don't know exactly why he would have cried over that, other than that maybe when he walked out to the buses and he saw that Dave Campo was indeed his head football coach for like the third year, right? Wasn't that the...
I
think he was there 2000, 2001, and 2002. I'm not sure. But... And that would be his last year. But I think that also Gary Walker followed Jerry Jones off the field and was like screaming at Jerry.
Really?
Because I think Jerry had made some kind of bold and brash comments. There's the whole thing about that. That whole first game, the seeds were sown when we scrimmaged the Cowboys a few weeks earlier. And Dom Capers did a good job of playing possum a little bit. He didn't play hardly any of the starters on defense. So the Cowboys offense just came out, was rolling all over everybody. It was a lot of guys that were college free agents or draft picks or what have you. And that they put that scrimmage on Hard Knocks, and they were talking about how awesome the Cowboys offense looked. Dave Campo got on the bus and saw Emmitt Smith, and he's like, whoa, rolling ball of butcher knives, huh? Just like all this kind of demeaning, degrading stuff. So we got into that game, and the Cowboys couldn't be more out of shape and unconditioned and just fat, lazy, worthless as an offense. It was really bad. And like to the point where in the third quarter, there was a haze of fireworks smoke hanging over the field because the NRG was still working out the kinks, Reliant at the time, and had a bunch of fireworks at halftime while the roof was closed. It was kind of weird. But it was hard to breathe. And you're looking at these offensive linemen, their eyes look like all glazed over. They look like they were ready to be served for Thanksgiving dinner. And it was just it was humiliating for the Cowboys. It really was. They were so heavily favored in that game, and they just got the crap beat out of them. So Gary's following Jerry Jones off the field. There's a picture of it. There's this book that commemorates that first game, and there's a picture of Jerry Jones screaming at, or excuse me, Gary Walker screaming at Jerry Jones as Jerry's walking off the field. So I think he may have been crying because he was scared that Gary was going to beat him up. Like maybe he peed his pants a little bit or something. And it was like, yeah, I haven't been bullied like this since I was a lad.
Little box score study here on that game. Do you happen to remember what the spread was on that game in Vegas?
I want to say it was like 16 or something.
Wasn't no, it wasn't
no,
that bad.
It wasn't.
Yeah, no, because the game was here, so it's Cowboys 8.5.
Oh wow!
People knew
the Cowboys weren't going to be good.
Right, there. the Cowboys were coming off 2-5-11 seasons.
Sean, I don't think you understand how bad we were in practice that week. I was more stressed for that game than any other game I've ever been in my entire life because the entire week there were times where we couldn't get a snap off, like. David Carr fumbled the ball like 4 times in a row in practice. We had to restart the period over and over again. And all I was thinking that entire week was, this is going to be on national television. We are going to get our asses kicked. This is not going to be good, man.
My favorite part of this, the over-under on the game, total points scored in Vegas.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever seen an NFL game with this low a total. 33.5.
Wow. Yeah.
Like 38, anything in the 30s is low. Like 38.5, low.
Look, and we had,
and it went under, by the way, right. 19-10.
When I was nervous about that week, I felt good about the defense. We had some studs on the team
players,
on defense.
Yeah.
We had some really legitimate, and we were a better defense that year than the stats would show because the offense was starting 6 rookies. I think in that game, the Texans started 6 rookies on offense, including a rookie quarterback. Imagine the rookies that have had productive rookie seasons. Typically, they have a veteran offense around them, and they have a good rushing attack and everything. David Carr had 0 of that. Yeah. None of it whatsoever. And then the Cowboys had Quincy Carter. So, yeah, I would imagine that people were looking at it. I'm surprised that the Cowboys were only favored by 8.5.
8.5.
That's disgusting.
8.5.
That's really, honestly, I'm appalled on behalf of Cowboys fans from 2002. Well, can you imagine going into that game and only being favored by 8.5?
They would wind up going.
You got Emmitt Smith on your team?
They would wind up going 5-11 that year. They went 5-11 3 years in a row under Dave Campo. Dave Campo, 5-11, 5-11, 5-11.
So that's why Jerry Jones was crying. We were kind of the coup de grace. I think when he lost that game, Jerry Jones realized, like, wow.
There was more going on than just you guys beating them.
I botched this entire offseason.
The whole thing. You had a hell of a game that night, dude.
Yeah,
you were the second leading tackler on the team.
It was a nose tackle. What are you going to do?
Do you know? I hear from some certain people that nose tackles don't get a lot of tackles.
Have you ever seen a nose tackle get 8 tackles in a game? John. I'm sorry you couldn't be bothered to look at my stats.
Yeah. Seth Payne, the inaugural game for the Texans, 6 tackles.
It was,
all solo jobbies, by the way. You didn't need any assistance on them. 2 TFLs and a sack. The safety,
That was fun. That was because it was a nationally televised game, too. So that was like that's one thing I discovered. When you have a big game on a nationally televised game, you get nothing but phone calls and love. And I don't think I even had text messaging.
It's 2002. Point.
You got to actually hear people's voices.
What kind of cell phone did you own in 2002? Was it a bag phone that you just plunked down in the middle of the
seat? I had one of those Nokias. Remember the kind of like the brick-shaped Nokias?
Yeah.
Where you thought they were small because of that. And then when I got to be baller status, I got like the Zoolander phone 1 year. And it was like super tiny. But then all of a sudden, that was the same year the Razor came out. And bigger phones were the thing. And so then, and I remember, I don't think I ever had, I remember wondering, like, wait, should I really plunk down $400 for a cellular telephone on a razor? And that's crazy. Nobody ever spent that much money on a cellular telephone.
Yeah, and now we're spending like $2,000. Yeah,
got a mortgage on this thing.
Right, you're holding the inside of the space shuttle.
I kind of literally have a mortgage on it, right? I pay $20 a month.
That's what I do. The same thing. I've mortgaged.
Dude, you know how they get you though too. It's like, oh, I mean, it's only an extra $5 a month for that much storage. Oh, but then it's only another $5 a month. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. No, I'm a sucker. I'm a total sucker.
Jerry Jones, by the way, despite him possibly peeing his pants and then crying about it after Gary Walker abused him in 2002, did a hell of a job the other night.
Yeah. Oh, he was great. He was great at the Houston Sports Awards.
Oh, yeah. Antonio Brown.
Yeah. Antonio Brown.
We were having a conversation off air, and I'm like, is there any way I can actually justify talking about this on air right now? And I think I can.
Okay.
Because I was having a conversation with a guy this weekend, a Canadian fellow.
Mm-hmm.
He sails, so I was talking about sailing. But he said, Seth, let me ask you this. He said, how much of what you guys do on air is like real versus how much of it is just for theater and what have you? And I said, okay, let me ask you a question first. Do you understand and realize that Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith are not actually on sports radio? And because he was asking about talk radio. For some reason, it's weird. People lump Stephen A. and Skip Bayless into talk radio.
You're saying that those two people are that genre?
That genre of television debate show?
Yeah.
People classify it as sports radio. It's really weird, and I've seen it, and I wondered if it was just a one-off, but like I've noticed it. I've picked up on it. The people routinely talk about, and sometimes they'll speak derogatorily, is that a word, about sports radio, and then reference Stephen A. and Skip Bayless. And
Stephen A. does have a radio show, for what it's worth.
Right. But when people are talking about it,
they
associate
for the most part, TV.
Many, many more people see him on TV than, which I understand it. It's sports talk, but I think the difference with sports radio, and I do because I try to pick up things from people all over the country. I think when you listen to sports radio, and especially like a local sports radio show, it's not nearly as hot takey is what you see out of Stephen A. and everything.
No.
And it's because you got to have a relationship with your listeners. You got people are driving in their cars and everything, especially it's 7:18 in the morning. They don't necessarily want to be getting screamed at.
Right.
I'm sorry when I do. Sometimes I can't help it because of the passion, Sean.
I don't think you do it as much.
No. But but I think that that's, I guess that's where it's, look, so if we're going to talk about Antonio Brown,
are you going to give a hot take on Antonio Brown?
I'm not, other than that people have, so like in having a relationship with our listeners, several people have brought this up to me. Oh, you guys are going to talk about Antonio Brown. How come you're not talking about Julian Edelman, who got arrested for jumping on the hood of a car? I would say this, because for one, Antonio Brown has done this multiple times, multiple times. And when he does it, he documents it on social media. There's video of him harassing the mother of his children, while his children are there, and cops out in front of his house from a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Honestly, the question, why are you spending more time on Antonio Brown than Julian Edelman? It defies any kind of logic in my brain as to how you could actually have that genuine question. Other than if your argument is that, hey, you're focusing on one because he's a person of color versus the white guy you're just letting off, I honestly don't see any validity to that in that. I think there are times where there's definitely that dynamic at play. I don't see how that could possibly be the case here. I'd be the first guy to point out that, hey, he was exonerated, but Julian Edelman got arrested for grabbing a girl's butt in a nightclub a few years back, but ultimately nothing became of it.
Right.
Julian Edelman is not he does not walk the line, but he doesn't give all this juiciness of Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown has been, he behaviored his way out of the Oakland Raiders. The Oakland Raiders spent two draft picks by him basically just acting like a belligerent fool. This is the difference between Antonio Brown and Julian Edelman's sagas at this point are almost nothing alike.
I'll simplify. I'll boil this down into a 10-second thought. They will someday do a 30 for 30 on the demise of Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
On the downward, there will be a 30 for 30 documentary on the downward spiral of Antonio Brown, the strangeness of which we are about to share with you the next stage here. Julian Edelman is just a story. Antonio Brown, saga is a perfect word for it, Seth. This is the They're never going to do a 30 for 30 on Julian Edelman jumping on the hood of a car in Beverly Hills.
Antonio Brown threw an ottoman out of a window before, in a high-rise.
When he was still with the Steelers.
And almost struck a toddler.
Yeah. So here's the latest with Antonio Brown.
Wait, one more before all this. Antonio Brown called the cops to his house because he claimed his car had been stolen. When they showed up to investigate the stolen car, he rudely told them to leave because they found the car.
They found the car,
like,
yeah.
It just never stops with Antonio Brown.
So here's the latest with Antonio Brown. He's got an arrest warrant out for him right now from the Hollywood, Florida Police Department. He spent Wednesday night essentially bunkered down in his home as they've issued an arrest warrant following allegations that he and his trainer attacked a moving company truck near Brown's Florida home.
I get it.
The police department said in a news release, damn movers, that Brown faces charges of burglary with battery, a felony, burglary of an unoccupied conveyance, and criminal mischief. Here's what the story is. Brown's trainer, Glenn Holt, had been arrested on a felony burglary charge on Tuesday. He posted bond. He got out. Brown is moving a bunch of his stuff from California to Florida. Okay,
yeah.
He hired a moving company to do that. And Brown, the mover, the documents allege that the moving company brought Brown's stuff there. Well, Brown didn't want to pay the bill, $4,000. And so Brown and his trainer essentially got physical with the moving truck driver to the point where Brown forced his way into the driver's side of the main cabin of the truck, began to physically strike the driver after a disagreement over payment escalated. Brown was then restrained by his associates. So there is a Brown crew that restrained him. He threw a rock at the moving truck as well. Later on, he agreed to pay the bill for the moving and the damage. The truck comes back to his house, and then he's like, well, I'll give you the $4,000 for the moving, but I'm not paying for the damage. So Antonio Brown, because this is a history thing with him. He
doesn't pay his bills.
He stiffed many other people
that
in the past.
Chef?
Right, dude, did like a $40,000 Pro Bowl spread.
I can't imagine at this point, if you know who Antonio Brown is and you know anything about his history, why do you accept any... Like, if Antonio Brown wants to do business with you, why on earth would you ever accept that job?
I don't know.
I mean, obviously, the moving company might not know the whole deal and everything, but that's a word of warning. If Antonio Brown wants you to render services, don't expect to get paid.
Right.
And then you might get the crap beat out of you before. The other thing I would say, though, too, is there's one profession. If there's, like, one non-combat profession that I wouldn't mess with, it's, like, any given mover that I've met, including, like, you might weigh in. This might be a 118-pound moving guy. They're like freaks of nature.
They do heavy lifting
all day long.
I could never do that.
No, they're so freaking tough.
Every time
I've ever hired movers, I felt like so much less of a man afterwards. Because I just think about myself like 45 minutes into what they're doing would have taken me like 4 hours, and it would have, and the truck would have been a mess. There would have been loose ends hanging out all over the place.
There's no time I feel like less of a man than when I'm standing there watching people move my things.
Yeah,
and I'm like, God, I'm such a
I'm
wuss.
Just a fancy lad, aren't I?
I don't even want to pick up that box over there and move it like five feet.
Oh, Louis, everything looks okay out here. Frankly, it's getting a little hot for me. I'm going to go sit in the air conditioning.
Right.
Would you guys mind closing the door when you come in and out? Because it's getting kind of warm in here.
So apparently Antonio Brown, they're waiting for him to turn himself in. The arrest warrant is out, and there was no police activity seen at Brown's home on Wednesday night after the warrant was issued. And that suggests that police are waiting until Thursday morning to arrest him if he doesn't turn himself in. So, Seth, it's 7:24. It's 8:24 in Florida. Something may have happened by now over there. What do we think happens? Do we see video out in front of Antonio Brown's house today of police going there to basically arrest him? Does he do a perp walk out of his house today? Antonio Brown.
So. Are they going to do that for this? I wonder that if you're the police department, you kind of got to have a conversation about how do we handle this exactly. You don't want to botch it, but you also don't want it to turn into something more than it needs to be when there's cameras involved.
And I'm not saying Antonio Brown's going to escalate it to a point where it's dangerous, but he may escalate it to a point where it really annoys a bunch of police officers who, as you just alluded to, he was hurling racial epithets at.
Was that in Hollywood or was that out in California?
That was in Florida. Yeah.
I think I had seen Hollywood, and in my mind it was like, oh, Hollywood, California.
That was in Florida.
So that was also in Florida.
So it's this police.
What I think Antonio Brown is ripe for? One of these stings they do where they send everybody a bunch of letters that said, hey, you won a prize. Come down and pick it up, And where do I pick this up? Oh, just that building next to the courthouse. And everybody shows up. You show up. You're like, I'm here to claim my prize.
Swarm.
Nope, you've got outstanding warrants.
Swarm.
How would you entice Antonio Brown into a scandal like that?
Oh,
I'd say like free training sessions.
No, I would say that the painting of you that you wanted is finally done.
It got shipped to
XYZ address.
You commission that lady.
Right.
That lady, I'm sure, would do it as a volunteer. Like, hey, Antonio, I hope we can cast aside all of our differences from earlier. I finished all the murals that you had commissioned.
Hey, by the way, why can't Antonio Brown have a functional relationship with one of his trainers? One of the things that that's part of this saga, as you call it, is the fact that he sexually harassed, maybe even sexually assaulted, one of his previous trainers. I think her name was Brittany Taylor.
Allegedly.
And now he's got this trainer who's basically one of his goons.
Yeah.
Who's going into the cab of a moving van and physically assaulting.
Antonio Brown shamed him into it.
Into doing it?
I think he pulled one of those.
If you're some great kind of trainer. You go into the moving truck and you mess this guy up. That would be booming.
I know I haven't paid you in 2 months, but I was just about to give you a raise.
So go beat this guy up for me.
Gronkowski, do you want Gronkowski, by him just being so always wanting to redo his contract and never actually testing, like
free
using
agency.
His leverage, he hurt other tight ends. Because Gronk, you understand how many average or like slightly above average wide receivers made more money than Rob Gronkowski. Rob Gronkowski would have been the person that set the market. Sean and I are telling you this. You're just basically continuing our conversation from the break because I saw something up on the TV that said, should Pat Mahomes give the Chiefs a discount with his next contract?
Why the hell would he do that?
Well, because Tom Brady gave his team's discounts. Uh-huh, so uh-huh. Tom Brady, likewise, because he's a saint.
I've seen Patrick Mahomes' girlfriend. She's not a Brazilian supermodel. It makes $1 billion a year.
Yeah, how much of that? What if, I know it's almost too convenient to say, but how much of Tom Brady's wife being ultra rich also made it just that much easier for him to say like, what's $1 million here or there?
I would say very easy.
Yeah.
Very easy. I don't say easy. It's $1 million or $5 million or whatever it is, but it's less painful.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's always, because it's always easy from the outside to say like, well, you're so rich already. What's a few million dollars? But generally, people that get rich and stay rich—that's the key part. The staying rich.
Staying rich.
It's really hard to get rich. Even harder to stay rich.
Right.
Those are the people that tend to just actually still care about the several million dollars here or there.
That's right.
That's why I worry so much about boxers sometimes.
Like,
no matter how much money they're making, like, no, it doesn't. You're not going to be able to resell that watch for $5 million.
Floyd Mayweather is texting out or tweeting out pictures of bets that he has for $250,000 on a random football game in week 10.
With Floyd, I feel like with Floyd, I wonder how much of it is just that part is even still calculated.
Yeah.
You know? I feel like Floyd actually probably has a certain number of manageable gambling losses that he views as advertising.
Yeah,
expenses,
brand management.
You know?
Yeah. We're getting people texting in things that make them feel like less of a man in the spirit of Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown beat up a mover earlier this week that was moving his stuff, which got Seth and I talking about the fact that anytime our stuff has been moved before, you know, you and I have both moved several times, that we feel like less of a man watching these more studly men pick up our heavy furniture and move them. And we're like, oh, right over there.
We're like watching from our bedroom.
Peering out.
with the curtains just barely open until they come to take the curtains down for us.
Right. So people are texting in what makes them feel like less of a man. Getting your oil changed is a big one.
That doesn't bother me at all because I know how to change my oil, and it's just it's frankly a pain in the. It's so much easier if I had a lift in my garage and I could do it standing up and everything. I'd be like, all right, yeah, I definitely did that. But I'm paying somebody because they have the equipment where they can just walk down into that little cave and do it themselves much easier than me. It's a convenience. That doesn't make me feel like less of a man.
This is a good one because I can relate to this one.
Yeah.
Mounting a TV on the wall.
Amy's
dad, every time we've moved, Amy's dad, who's very handy,
uh-huh.
he comes over and mounts the TV on the wall. And he actually comes over and does a lot of the stuff. I have one for you.
Your future father-in-law coming over to do anything for you?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I have another one that he does. He puts up our Christmas lights on our house. Like, gets out the ladder,
right, yeah, you're gonna
puts them on the roof, and I'm down there like, yeah, that one over there. I'm like down there supervising and directing traffic, and I feel like a complete heel.
Sean,
they listen, so they know right now.
Wait a second, though. I have to bring this up then.
What?
Because now I know something about you.
What?
When we went out and we were doing our community service for the station the other day, and we were painting the house, the old lady's house.
A few months ago.
Everybody's out, like, they're painting trim. Other people are carrying trash from the backyard to the front yard and everything.
Right.
Sean is holding court, just telling stories all around. That was your job that day, was just standing around telling stories. The sales guys are over and you're telling funny stories. Then you went over and you were entertaining the accounting people for a while.
It's the happiest charity event we ever had.
I'm looking there. I'm drenched from head to toe in sweat, trying to get the trim work right. And I'm looking over at you and you just got a big old grin on your
face.
Just
trying to do what I do best.
Eating a donut, waiting for lunch to show up.
Donuts were delicious.
Somebody.
So you've carried that around with you for a long time.
I wasn't put out by it or anything.
That's funny.
I felt like that's your gift in life.
Somewhere Amy's dad is somewhere. He's like, I want to go drinking with Seth right now.
Yeah. Somebody else has a father-in-law one. He says, my father-in-law never letting me pay for dinner or splitting a bill with my brother-in-laws, and they all drop those heavy-weighted platinum cards on the table. Yeah, what point? Sometimes that becomes an entrenched family dynamic. At some point, you're going to have to tell your father before the dinner, your father-in-law. So you're like,
it's
hey,
on us.
Jim, I got this tonight.
Yeah.
Let me do this for you, Jim. I appreciate so much of it. Don't make a big deal out of it or whatever.
Yep.
Now, Tony Soprano always felt like it was his.
Oh, Tony.
His, he got really, remember, upset when Meadows' boyfriend tried to pick up the tab.
Finn.
He got pissed about
it. Yeah, Finn DiTrollio.
Boy,
yeah.
Finn did not belong in that family.
He did not at all. Not even one tiny
waspy
bit.
Little punk.
Yep. So keep texting. Keep texting those in.
I know him when I see him because I am one.
713-572-4610. Things that make you feel like less of a man. So Jim Crane was at the Houston Sports Awards the other night. We caught up with him for a few minutes on the show on Tuesday afternoon.
It makes me feel like less of a man when my best friend Ted... I can't say it. Never mind.
Back to Jim Crane.
Does things with my wife. I think that's it. Is that a Ted Johnson
joke?
I don't know.
So Jim Crane met with the media at the Houston Sports Awards, and he told the Houston fans, you are going to hear something from the players in spring training.
The players have been beaten up a little bit, and I think, you know, they've been all spread out. I saw some of the things yesterday on with the guys interviewed. They're just kind of getting some advice to take it easy. When we get down to spring training, we'll all get them together, and they'll come out with a strong statement as a team, and I think, you know, I'll apologize for what happened, and we'll move forward.
All right, so that was Jim Crane, and that's the first we've heard that there is a plan for the players to apologize. Seth, they caught a lot of heat the other day, mostly Bregman and Altuve, because they're the most prominent guys who have at least spoken, period, about this thing. There's a lot of hand-wringing from people over the fact that they're not showing any remorse, nor are they apologizing to anybody.
Yeah. Well, and I think at least part of this and where some of the questions come up is that there is that sometimes people use the, hey, there's an investigation going on, as kind of an excuse not to talk when really there is no reason for the investigation to hold it up. I don't know if that's valid here or not. I think the more likely reason, and Jim Crane stated this, was that everybody was all apart. These guys aren't all in the same geographic location. And if you're gonna start issuing apologies kind of ad hoc and from one to the next, there's a chance for there to be more drama. I like the idea of them all getting together and kind of coming up uniformly with something that they should say to address all of this. I would imagine, too, and this is the hard part, there's the public image of all this, and then there's how the guys feel in their heart, which is probably, I'm guessing, and also surmising from other things, that there's a certain, well, look, yeah, we did this, but let me remind you that other teams... are not innocent in this.
That's right.
And so you feel, I think they probably feel singled out, you know? And look, it's they did it. They got to account for it. But then also, there's the fact that other teams that did it, but then also, okay, there's individuals on the Astros that may have barely participated. There are some individuals that didn't participate at all that were on the team in 2017. Are they supposed to come out and apologize? Is he supposed to, you know?
And that's my question is, what is this apology going to look like? Yeah. Jim Crane's word is apology. He said there will be an apology when the players are together. So is this some sort of group apology where they're all standing there? Is it a statement that comes from the team on behalf of all of the players? Is if it's an apology that's an apology where they all stand up and there's a group apology, is there a certain player that reads the apology or makes the statement? Are they going to answer questions? Is it a media session?
Yeah.
I'll tell you this right now. I don't want to be the player that's going to read this apology because that is the one person who will then be pointed to as, well, I guess that guy was for sure. Imagine they make Alex Bregman read the apology.
Right.
What's the first thing people are going to think? Well, for sure he did it. I mean, he read the damn apology.
Yeah, no, and all these clowns everywhere.
I'm not saying it's fair, but that's what
they'll
do.
Because it's already, in terms of the public opinion, I look around and I see comments by various, it's not just fans, it's writers as well, that lump 2019 into 2017. But there was an investigation that found no evidence of wrongdoing in 2019. And this is when Major League Baseball had installed observers in the video room, observers in the dugouts during the playoffs. All of this has happened. And people are acting like there's no difference between 2017 and 2019. That part, I kind of like, because there are a lot of people out there that somehow have convinced themselves that Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve and all these guys aren't even good baseball players. They ignore their road splits, ignore all these things, and they think that all of a sudden these guys are going to hit 200 this year. So it's going to be fun to watch that unfold over the course of the season, because there are a lot of morons out there that are going to be vastly disappointed by the fact that, oh, wow, yeah, Alex Bregman, who was awesome on the road without any help, obviously, at any point, including 2019 when there wasn't any help at home,
right.
He's still awesome.
Right, and that's a great point. Like, people forget, Jose Altuve hit 330 every year up through 2017, yeah. And was still hitting very, very well
in
2017.
He's been well a great established hitter his whole career. Road splits were better in 2017 than
guys
at home. It just, there's not, I think, there's people that are dumb enough out there that think, honestly, that, like, the only reason any of these guys are good was because there was some tub thumping going on from time to time.
Right.
Back in 2017.
Yep.
It's going to be fun to watch that. I'm taking notes. I'm keeping receipts from all
this.
Are
you?
Yeah.
Okay,
the other thing, too, you know, the other thing that's annoyed me about all this is where, like, I feel like baseball writers who typically, I'll say baseball writers are usually very meticulous about things. It's a game of statistics.
Yeah.
It's a game of history. And I read this article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday that says, hey, whoa, it turns out that the players had been granted immunity by testifying. Yeah, we've known that for 2 weeks, you clown.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, like, what the hell? How are you acting like this is breaking news? We've known this. Nobody's even paying attention to the actual facts of the case.
Seth, I was reading that article in the Wall Street Journal, and I was questioning myself. I'm like, they said this in 2017.
Right.
When they issued the memo, they said out front, like, the players will not be. When they issued the warning in 2017, they said the people who will be punished will be management, not the players. Like, this has been going back to the time that they issued the edict on this.
And we had Jim Callis on the day after the report, and he was talking about how the players had been granted immunity is not the right word, but that they weren't going to be punished as long as they cooperated with the report.
Here's my solution with the apology is, if we don't want if we don't want specific players who are still with the team to get up there and apologize, they should just cut Evan Gattis a check for like $100,000, bring him back for a day, and let him read the apology.
Mm-hmm.
Since he's the one where the John Boy video is out there of him hearing the garbage can banging, and he's out of baseball now anyways, let's let Gattis apologize on behalf of the 2017 Astros.
Oh, and somebody points out, you're right, Seth, and some of those dumb people happen to be major league pitchers. And it's true, like, Marcus Stroman is acting like any struggles he had versus the Astros must have been because the Astros were cheating and whatnot. There's a lot of pitchers out there that think, oh, and this is the other weird thing about some of these writers from various locales that somehow think that because other Major League Baseball players heard the rumors about the buzzers, that's somehow corroborating evidence or something. Like, heard the same rumors I did? Like, oh, yeah, that's how rumors work, dumbasses.
Right, that's right.
That's the same way when somebody says that Jim slept with Sally in the office. Just because 8 other people heard the rumor doesn't mean that those two got busy with each other.
Good for
even
Jim.
Though they probably did, because Jim's a like a goat.
Mike Fire should read the apology, someone said. How great would that be?
That would be awesome. I'd like, on behalf of the 2017 Astros,
Mike Fires,
I'd like to apologize for everything we did.
That is great. I like this one. We would like to apologize for Yankee fans being a bunch of whining bitches. That's like one of those, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I didn't beat the crap out of you a lot sooner, that kind of thing. So, all right. So the Astros will be issuing an apology, coming to a spring training site near you. Let's do some headlines. Rockets win last night. We haven't been able to say that in a long, long time. The Rockets beat the Denver Nuggets last night, a depleted Denver Nuggets team.
Well, we'd only been able to say it once out of the last six games.
Yeah, but four games in a row, we haven't been able to say it. It feels good to say it. Rockets win, especially as they get ready to embark on a road trip to essentially take on the entire Northwest Division for the most part. They're going to Portland. They're going to Minnesota. They're going to play Denver again here in Denver. Shortly, Utah as well. So not an easy road trip they've got coming up. So they needed this win last night. Russell Westbrook was tremendous again last night. He was two assists away from a triple double. He's gotten his game straightened out. Of all the things that are wrong with the Rockets right now, and there are still some things that are wrong with this team, Russell Westbrook is not one of them. In my favorite stat for Russell Westbrook, Seth, 0 for 0 from three-point range.
Yeah, I think one of the hard things that's been hard to process over the last couple of weeks is that it's just been flat-out Harden underperforming, you know, and just looking so out of sorts. So it's nice to see him really get back into his flow last night. And I think the big thing is that, look, Eric Gordon, when Eric Gordon is hitting his threes and Eric Gordon is doing more of what we expect out of him, he's that classic glue guy. He ties everything else together. Yep. You can have two great players, but on any given night, you can't depend on both of those guys being great, obviously. Eric Gordon's one of the guys that fills in the gaps, and he hadn't been really doing that as of late. Last night, it felt good to be at that game.
Yeah.
Everything felt right. It was good to watch Jokic gasping for air as he tried to follow Capella up and down the court, too.
Yeah, man. He's not in good shape.
I know. He had a flop early on. It was one of the most unartful flops I've ever seen, and it worked. It was so unethical, because we're used to seeing artistry with our flops here,
yes,
especially on the three-pointers.
Yeah, we've got some of the best in the business.
I found myself disgusted that I had even witnessed that in person. I felt dirty, Jokic trying to flop.
Yeah, it was tough to watch. In other action last night, the New Orleans Pelicans fans got to experience the debut of Zion Williamson. Seth, on the hype meter, Zion Williamson coming into the NBA is the most hyped rookie since ... Is it LeBron? Is he the most hyped NBA rookie since LeBron? The suits at ESPN have been saying that the three players that people are talking most about right now, I don't know how they measure this, if it's social media or if it's just them trying to create a narrative to market Zion to all of us at ESPN, but LeBron, yeah. Steph Curry, Zion Williamson.
It's interesting because Lonzo Ball clearly, obviously, was never in the same category as Zion Williamson in terms of the type of player he's going to be. But in terms of actual hype, I feel like Lonzo might be up there just because they were so good at generating and creating hype.
True.
So it depends, I guess, on how you label.
How about deserved hype?
Deserved hype, Zion Williamson. Yes, yeah. that might be it.
And he scored 22 points in 18 minutes last night, and he had a stretch of about 3 minutes of basketball where he knocked down 4 three-pointers. I don't know if this is what they're looking for from Zion Williamson. People are going crazy over this debut, and there's part of me that's like, okay, I mean, like, are we expecting Zion to all of a sudden be Steph Curry and he's going to be raining threes? It was a cool debut. His numbers were big for only playing 18 minutes. Good for New Orleans.
I'm looking at an article from 2010 about the most hyped players to enter the NBA in the last 10 years.
Okay.
So this is interesting. Go back to 2010. Number one was Shaquille O'Neal.
Yep.
Number two was LeBron James.
Yep.
Number three was Tim Duncan.
Tim Duncan.
Can you guess who number four would have been?
Oh, Greg Oden. Yeah. He was
number five is the big shocker.
Is that Kwame Brown?
It is Kwame Brown.
Oh, my God. Yeah. All right.
So Zion Williamson, definitely more hyped than Kwame Brown.
Nothing is guaranteed. For the record, I don't know that Zion's going to live up to the hype. I think he's a good player. I just don't know about that body type, man. He's a little heavy. More headlines here. Justin Reed, as it turns out, played the entire 2019 season with a torn labrum in his shoulder. He tweeted about it yesterday. He said, the news is out there. Yes, I played hurt the entire 2019 season. He's going to get surgery on the shoulder here shortly. Seth, he's going to get surgery on this torn labrum.
Yeah.
You've had a torn labrum. Is this going to be an ongoing thing, or will the surgery pretty much put this thing to bed?
It hopefully shouldn't be an ongoing thing. Now, I had to do it 2 years in a row because the first injury didn't stick, but we kind of tried something more less invasive and more quote-unquote revolutionary at the time, and it turned out to be just a bad process.
Okay.
So the second time I had it, because I had multiple, I kept dislocating my shoulder 1 year. So they did a pretty extreme procedure. It was my left arm. And it worked. I've never had an issue since then. But I couldn't, if I were left-handed, I wouldn't be able to throw real well or anything. Right. But Justin Reed doesn't need to throw the football. So if whatever they need to do, I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah.
One of our listeners weighed in on this, and he reminded me of what it's like to have these issues that Justin Reed had to deal with all this year. For one, the frustrating thing about a torn labrum is you might go through an entire game, you might work out a few times, and your shoulder actually feels pretty good. Then you go to reach for the Cheerios box on the top shelf, and you sublux your shoulder.
Right.
It's out of nowhere, these random weird movements, including in a football game, like maybe reaching up for an interception or something, all of a sudden you're in extreme pain.
Yeah.
So he had to play the entire season, know that at any given moment, sometimes not even the big hits, but the little movements, like trying to reach for a ball or something, is going to put him in extreme pain.
Probably the two most memorable plays he had this year involved him using the shoulder.
Yeah.
Stopping Leonard Fournette at the goal line on that two-point conversion in week two, and then the pass breakup that Whitney Mercilus turned into an interception in week 15.
And one of the things is actually laying your shoulder in there and jarring somebody with it, that's not necessarily the thing that's going to aggravate it as much as any time you're reaching out away from your body.
You're moving the ball in socket.
Yeah, which he has to do a lot of, though, too. I mean, he's a tough kid.
Yeah.
He's one of those kids that comes into the league a veteran player.
Yes.
The other guy that I would think of like that is D'Amico Ryans.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had to call D'Amico Ryans sir when he was a rookie. I was in my 10th year.
Made you feel like a little kid.
Yeah.
Eli Manning is retiring, which will touch off 5 years of really fun debate over whether Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer or not. Seth, I don't think Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer. I don't know that I ever got a firm yes or no from you, other than the fact that I think you and I share a lot of the same thoughts on this. But if you were a Hall of Fame voter, if John McClain brought you to Canton with him to be part of that group that picks the Hall of Fame class every year, would you arrive at a point where Eli Manning, not first ballot, not fifth ballot, any ballot, do you
would
think
say
he,
this
would you make him a Hall
John
of Fame?
McClain, I would say a lot of you are going to get up there and say, well, look, he wasn't a Hall of Fame player except that he had two Super Bowls. And, well, heck, we put Terry Bradshaw in there based mostly on his Super Bowls more than how good of a quarterback he is. To which I say, all right. How about maybe you sleep with somebody you shouldn't have slept with every now and then? Does that mean you marry him? Hell no. So just because we slept with Terry Bradshaw doesn't mean we need to sleep with Eli Manning.
This is the presentation you
were not going to marry Eli Manning because we slept with Terry Bradshaw. Yeah.
So that's a no? Or
Your lapses in judgment earlier on don't mean that later on you need to be held to those same lapses in judgment.
Okay, I gotcha. So Eli,
Sean,
retired.
If I held you to your sexual history, or to what time is it? 7:53. Yeah, we're not supposed to talk about this stuff anyway.
So, anyways, Eli Manning's retiring Friday. Tomorrow's the press conference.
I hate having. You know what I hate though is people act like if you say that somebody isn't in the Hall of Fame, they act like they shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Right. They act like you're saying he sucks. Like, no, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying he's not nearly as good as those other Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
Where do you put Philip Rivers in the Eli Manning pecking order? Do you like Philip Rivers more or less as a quarterback than Eli Manning?
I like him a lot better as a quarterback than
Philip
Eli
Rivers?
Manning. Yeah.
Okay.
And he's not a Hall of Famer, by the way.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be either. Have you seen this last one in headlines here? This is a name I don't know is going to be familiar with most of our audience, but it's a fascinating story. One of our peers, former peers, Craig Carton, former employee of the same company we are employees of, Entercom. WFAN up in New York is the sports talk station up in New York. Craig Carton was one of the morning hosts with Boomer Esiason.
Yeah.
So their version of Payne and Pendergast at one time was Boomer and Carton. Craig Carton, as it turns out, was living a double life.
Right.
Where he was gambling millions and millions and millions of dollars. He had people, chasing him for money. He'd go to Atlantic City.
This was a couple years ago it was found out, and he lost his job, 2 years ago? It was in the Houston Super Bowl, wasn't it, right around that time?
It was right around that time. 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
As it turns out, he was funding his gambling addiction by scamming people. He had a ticket scam going on and just swindled people out of millions and millions of dollars. He recently went to prison. He's gone away now for a few years at least. They're going to be creating a documentary about his life. I believe HBO is going to be, it's HBO, because Boomer Esiason has said he's been interviewed for it.
Yeah.
So they're going to be doing a documentary on Craig Carton's life. I think ultimately this is going to be like that Mike and the Mad Dog 30 for 30, where people in the Northeast are much more interested in this.
Yeah.
How intrigued are you by a Craig Carton documentary? Sports talk host who got caught up in the glitz and glamour of Ponzi schemes and ticket schemes and million-dollar gambling
bets.
It's
a really interesting story. I guess it'll depend on how well it's done.
Right.
But because you're right, it's not... He's a regional celebrity.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody, I remember people in sports media were going crazy for that 30 for 30 on Mike and the Mad Dog, and it got the worst ratings a 30 for 30's ever gotten. Because it's still in it. Sometimes people in New York have a hard time understanding that it's a niche. When you talk about nationally, you're still a niche if you're just talking about something that's going on in that city.
Is there a particular Houston media personality whose life would make a good documentary that people in Houston would be interested in? I'm thinking off the cuff here.
I think Josh Innes would be fascinating, actually. Josh is an interesting human being. Yeah. Like, very, he's got an interesting upbringing and everything. I think Josh Innes. Who else? As far as Bob Allen would be a fun one.
Bob Allen was the one I was thinking.
Bob Allen was like a much more intelligent Ron Burgundy.
Yeah.
Like, you think about like what it was like in the 70s and 80s being the local sports guy on local television and everything in a pretty big city, but Houston was like a growing city, much like San Diego in the 70s. That might have been close to a more dignified Ron Burgundy type story.
Bob Allen was the one I was thinking.
We should have done a bunch of interviews with Bob after, because Bob was a good storyteller too. I don't know how many stories he would have told, but he had some really, really good stories. Tim Melton too. Tim Melton told some stories about at one of his memorial services, he told a few hilarious stories about Bob.
Well, they like McClain, actually, came up in a time where there wasn't nearly the wall between media and players as there is now.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's interesting, there was more journalistic integrity, I think. And that they might have seen players out and everything, but there was more. There were classically trained journalists to where they felt like, oh, we got to get two sources for everything. We've got to, you know, we've got to maintain a certain barrier between. But because of that, the relationship was different. Those guys kept stories off the record a lot more. When it came to something like scandalous in a personal life, they weren't going to touch it.
Yeah.
And it was because that was just kind of the... We're going to cover sports, and that's what we're here to do, is cover sports. So they have a lot of really good stories about athletes that never saw the light of day because they just kind of felt like that's not our purview. If the gossip columnist wants to write about it, then so be it. Now everything's just gone.
They were bigger stars back then too, locally. Yeah. And I think the big reason why was that cable television hadn't proliferated to the point that it has now.
Yeah.
There were four channels. So you got your news.
There was no blogging or YouTube or anything
there was,
like that.
There was no they cornered the market on being the place to go to get your news.
Yeah,
you know, and so they were bigger celebrities back then too. I think bigger celebrities probably inherently have more interesting stories.
Mm-hmm.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.